All right, so we've got a whole stack of research here on Italian wine.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to do a deep dive for you.
A mountain.
It is a mountain.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about Italian wine regions and grapes and...
The whole nine yards.
The whole nine yards. But before we even get into Italy, I found some interesting stuff about grapes in general.
Okay.
So, you know, we've all heard of like Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Pinot Noir.
Right.
But did you know there are all these French-American hybrid grapes that are really popular in northeastern North America?
Interesting.
Like, they didn't really take off in France, but they've kind of found a home over here.
Yeah, and in other places, too, like Brazil and Japan.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And speaking of grapes you wouldn't expect,
okay.
I came across this thing about the southeastern United States.
Right.
They have this native grape called the muscadine.
Interesting.
And it's a totally different species than the European grapes we usually drink. Yeah, it's like its own thing. And get this, the most popular variety, it's called Scuppernong. Mm. It's unisexual.
What?
I know, right? So you need male vines planted nearby for it to even produce fruit.
So, like, how does that work?
Well, I guess the male vines provide the pollen for the female vines.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. But that seems kind of complicated for growers.
It does, which is why newer varieties like Noble are self-fertile, which is way easier.
Oh, so they don't have to worry about planting the males.
Exactly.
That's interesting. I always kind of assumed all grapes were, you know, self-pollinating.
Me too. But apparently not. Okay, so I know we're supposed to be talking about Italian wine, but I thought Pinot Noir would be a good place to start.
Sure.
Because it's a grape that we all know and love. But it actually has a few quirks.
Like what?
Well, for one thing, it's incredibly sensitive to its environment.
Right.
So if it's not grown in the right conditions, it can actually make pretty mediocre wine.
That's so funny because it's like the grape behind some of the most expensive wines in the world.
I know, right? It's kind of ironic.
It is. You'd think it would be like a superstar all the time.
You would. And to make things even more complicated, Pinot Noir has these color mutations.
Color mutations.
Yeah. Like Pinot Gris and Pinot Blanc.
Wait a minute.
Uh-huh.
Those are actually just mutants of Pinot Noir.
They are. It's wild, right? And then there's another one called Meunier.
Ah, I never knew that.
Yeah, so it's like this whole family of grapes that are all related but look totally different.
That's fascinating. It's like they have secret identities or something.
I know. Okay, so we've talked a bit about the grapes themselves, but let's switch gears and talk about viticultural practices.
Okay.
Because our research emphasizes how crucial these are for the quality of the wine.
Definitely. Like, even something as simple as pruning
right.
can have a big impact on the grapes.
Yeah. And I was reading about these high training systems.
Oh, yeah, where they train the vines upward on trellises.
Exactly. So they're not just growing close to the ground.
Right. And that can be really helpful in areas with shorter growing seasons because it gives the grapes more sunlight.
Oh, that makes sense. So it helps them ripen better.
Exactly. And it also makes it easier to manage the vineyard, like for pruning and harvesting.
So the win-win.
Pretty much. But it's not just about the height. The way the rows are oriented and how the canopy of leaves is managed also matters a lot.
Because that affects how much sun the grapes get.
Exactly. And how much air can circulate through the vineyard, which can help prevent diseases.
So it's all connected.
It really is. It's like a big puzzle where all the pieces have to fit just right.
And speaking of important pieces, we can't forget about rootstocks.
Nah. The unsung heroes of viticulture.
Right. They're kind of like the foundation of the vine.
Exactly. They anchor the plant in the soil and absorb water and nutrients.
But they also do so much more than that, right?
Oh, yeah. They can influence things like disease resistance, drought tolerance, and even the quality of the grapes.
So choosing the right rootstock is crucial.
It's like matchmaking for grapes. You have to find the perfect match for the specific vineyard conditions.
Like soil type and climate.
Exactly. And even the desired wine style.
Our sources mentioned this rootstock called 3309C, which is supposed to be great for dryland viticulture.
Oh, yeah. That one's known for its drought tolerance.
But it also tends to produce lower yields, right?
That's right, which can lead to more concentrated flavors in the grapes.
So it's a trade-off.
Sort of, but a lot of winemakers think it's worth it.
Makes sense. Okay, so we've talked about grapes, viticultural practices, and now I think it's time to add another key element to the mix.
What's that?
The environment. Especially water.
Ah, yes. Water is essential for any vineyard. It affects everything from vine growth to fruit development.
And ultimately, the quality of the wine.
Absolutely. Too much or too little water can have a huge impact.
I remember reading about this thing called capillary flow.
Oh, right. That's the way water moves through the tiny spaces in the
So
soil.
it's influenced by things like soil texture and structure.
Exactly. And it plays a big role in how water reaches the vine's roots.
It's like an underground irrigation system.
In a way, yeah. And understanding how it works helps winemakers manage water distribution in the vineyard.
And I imagine that's especially important in places like Italy, where you have such a variety of soil types and climate.
Oh, absolutely. Italy is incredibly diverse geographically.
Right, from the rolling hills of Tuscany to the volcanic slopes of Mount Etna.
It's a wine lover's paradise.
It really is. Okay, so I think we've laid a good foundation with this general viticulture knowledge.
Yeah, I think so too.
Now I'm ready to dive into those specific Italian wine regions and grapes. Where should we start our virtual tour?
Well, let's raise a glass and head north to Piedmont, home to some of Italy's most powerful and age-worthy red wines.
Sounds good to me.
Get ready for Nebbiolo, the king of Italian grapes.
Okay, I'm intrigued. I've heard whispers about Nebbiolo, but I'm ready to learn all about it.
It's a grape that demands respect and patience, but the rewards are well worth it.
I'm ready for the challenge. Let's go.
Piedmont is pretty much the heartland of Nebbiolo.
Oh, so this is where it all happens.
You could say that. It's the grape behind Barolo and Barbaresco, some of the most sought-after wines in Italy.
Those names definitely ring a bell. I've heard they're pretty intense.
They can be. Nebbiolo wines are known for their powerful tannins and high acidity.
So, not exactly a light and fruity sip.
Not really. They're more of a slow-sipping, contemplation kind of wine. The aromas are incredible, though.
What kind of aromas are we talking about?
Think tar, roses, truffles. It's really complex.
Wow, that's quite a combination.
And it gets even better as the wine ages. It can take years, even decades, for them to really open up.
So these are wines for the patient connoisseur.
Absolutely.
Oh,
But Piedmont isn't just about Nebbiolo.
there's more.
You bet. Another important grape here is Barbera.
Barbera. Okay.
It makes wines that are a bit more approachable in their youth. Still full of flavor, but with a vibrant acidity and juicy fruit character.
So a bit more my speed, maybe?
Possibly. But don't dismiss Nebbiolo entirely. It's an experience.
Fair enough. I'll add it to my list to try. Okay, so we've got powerful reds and approachable reds. What about whites?
Ah, glad you asked. Piedmont is also the home of Asti, known for its sweet and lightly sparkling Moscato d'Asti.
Moscato d'Asti. Now that's a name I recognize. Isn't that the one that's a little bubbly and sweet?
That's the one. It's perfect for those who like a touch of sweetness.
And it's great for celebrations. Yeah.
Definitely. It's a very festive wine.
All right, so Piedmont is officially on my wine travel bucket list.
Excellent choice. But there's so much more of Italy to explore.
I know, I can't wait. Where to next?
Let's head east to the Veneto region.
Veneto, okay.
This is the land of Prosecco.
Ah, Prosecco. Now we're talking.
It's made from the Glera grape, and it's become incredibly popular all over the world.
I can see why it's so light and bubbly and refreshing.
And very food friendly, but Veneto has more to offer than just Prosecco.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's also home to Valpolicella.
Valpolicella, that's so familiar. Is that a red wine?
It is. It's typically a blend of Covina, Rondinella, and Molinara grapes.
Yeah, there are different styles of it, right?
Exactly. You've got Valpolicella Classico, which is light and fruity, and then there's Valpolicella Ripasso, which is a bit richer and more complex.
And then there's Amarone, right? Isn't that the really intense one?
That's the one. It's made using a special drying process called appassimento.
Appassimento. What's that?
Basically, they lay the grapes out on mats to dry for several months before they're pressed.
They're like raisins.
Kind of, it concentrates the sugars and flavors in the grapes, resulting in a wine that's incredibly rich and concentrated.
Intense, huh? I've heard it's an experience.
It definitely is. It's a wine for special occasions or for pairing with really flavorful dishes.
Okay, I'm adding Amarone to my must-try list.
Good choice. It's a classic for a reason.
Okay, so we've done Piedmont and Veneto. Where to next on our Italian wine adventure?
Let's head to Tuscany.
Tuscany. Oh, I'm excited about this one.
This is the heartland of Sangiovese, the grape that gives us Chianti.
Chianti. I feel like I'm finally in familiar territory. I love a good Chianti.
It's a classic for a reason. Tuscan Sangiovese wines have this wonderful combination of cherry and plum fruit with hints of leather and earthiness.
So it's a wine that really reflects the Tuscan landscape.
You could say that. And there's a lot of variety within Chianti as well.
Oh.
You have the classic Chianti Classico, which is known for its elegance and structure. And then there are more modern interpretations that might be a bit fruitier and more approachable.
So something for everyone.
Absolutely. And then there are the Super Tuscans.
Super Tuscans. I've heard that name thrown around, but I'm not really sure what they are.
So these are wines that break the traditional rules of Chianti.
How so?
Well, they often blend Sangiovese with international varieties like Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot.
So they're kind of rebels.
You could say that. They really push the boundaries of what Tuscan wine could be.
They've become quite sought after, haven't they?
They have. They can be some of the most expensive wines in Italy.
Wow. Okay, I'm definitely adding Tuscany to my wine travel list. But we still have more of Italy to see, right?
We do. Let's head south to Campania.
Campania. Okay.
This is a region that's known for its volcanic soils.
Volcanic soils. Now that sounds interesting.
They give the wines a really unique character.
I bet. What kind of grapes grow there?
The star grape of Campania is Aglianico.
Aglianico. I'm not so familiar with that one.
It makes wines with dark fruit flavors, firm tannins, and often these smoky, earthy notes that come from the volcanic soil.
So it's a wine with a real sense of place.
Exactly. The most famous Aglianico wine is Taurasi.
Taurasi. Okay, I'll have to look out for that one. So Campania is all about big, bold reds.
Mostly. But they do have some white wines as well. You'll want to try Fiano.
Fiano, all right. What's that one like?
It has a lovely aromatic complexity with nutty flavors and a distinct minerality that also reflects the volcanic soil.
So even the white wines have that volcanic character.
It seems so. Okay, I think we have time for one more region.
Perfect. Where are we going?
Let's finish our tour in Sicily.
Sicily, the island of sunshine and amazing food.
And amazing wine. Sicily has a long history of winemaking, and it's home to a lot of unique grape varieties.
Unique grape varieties. Tell me more.
Well, one of the most important red grapes is Nero di Vola.
Nero di Vola. That one sounds familiar. I think I've seen it on wine labels.
It's becoming more and more popular. It makes wines with rich, dark fruit flavors, firm tannins, and sometimes a hint of chocolate or spice.
So a bit like a Sicilian version of a Cabernet Sauvignon.
You could say that.
Yeah.
And then there's Nerello Mescalese.
Nerello Mescalese. Okay. Uh-huh. What's special about that one?
It grows on the slopes of Mount Etna.
Mount Etna. So more volcanic wines?
That's right. Nerello Mescalese wines have bright acidity, elegant tannins, and these lovely aromas of red berries and floral notes, often with a touch of spice.
That sounds delicious.
It is, and very food friendly, especially with Sicilian cuisine.
I can imagine. All right, so Sicily is definitely going on my travel list.
I highly recommend it.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive.
We have.
Five regions, tons of grapes, and so much history.
It's been quite a journey.
It really has. I'm feeling inspired to try all these new wines.
That's the spirit.
But before we go full on wine tasting, I think we should recap what we've learned. So we've journeyed through Italy from north to south.
Yeah, we've explored a lot of vineyards.
We sure have. And I think we've uncovered some really fascinating stuff about Italian wine.
Definitely.
First of all, I think it's amazing how each region has its own distinct personality when it comes to wine.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can really taste the difference between a wine from Piedmont and a wine from Sicily.
It's all about the terroir.
Right, exactly. And that's something that really struck me during this deep dive. Like, it's not just about the grapes. It's about the whole environment where they're grown.
The soil, the climate, the altitude, all of it plays a role.
And then you add in the human element.
The winemakers.
Right. Mm-hmm. Their traditions, their techniques, their passion.
That's what makes Italian wine so special.
It really is. Okay, so let's recap some of the key things we learned about those five regions we explored.
Okay.
Piedmont. Where it all starts with Nebbiolo, the king of Italian grapes.
The home of Barolo and Barbaresco.
Those powerful, age-worthy reds that are like a symphony in a glass.
Exactly. And then we had Veneto with its sparkling Prosecco.
The life of the party.
And don't forget Valpolicella with its different styles, from light and fruity to the intense Amarone.
That one's definitely on my list to try.
And then there's Tuscany.
The land of rolling hills and Sangiovese.
Chianti Classico, Super Tuscans, so much to discover.
I'm already dreaming of a Tuscan wine tour.
And then we went south to Campania, where Aglianico thrives in those volcanic soils. That's
giving us Taurasi and other powerful red to add to the list.
And Fiano, with its unique minerality.
And finally, we landed in Sicily.
Where Nero di Vola and Nerello Mescalese show off the island's vibrant character.
So much diversity. It's amazing how much there is to learn about Italian wine.
It's a lifelong journey for sure.
And it's a journey I'm excited to continue. I feel like we've just scratched the surface.
That's the beauty of it. There's always something new to discover.
Well, I want to thank you for sharing your expertise with us today. This has been an incredibly enlightening deep dive.
It's been my pleasure. I always love talking about Italian wine.
And to our listeners, we hope you've enjoyed this journey as much as we have.
Saluxins.
And remember, the next time you open a bottle of Italian wine, take a moment to appreciate all the history, the passion, and the artistry that went into making it. Ciao.